And we are, excuse me, and we are with Bird Lee and Nancy Joe from the sister stations, KGGV, from Guerneville. And, of course, Guerneville is on the Russian River, which empties out into the Pacific Ocean. And we are intimately connected with the Pacific here. We love our pristine coast and...
But our river is not pristine.
The river is not pristine, but the coast still almost is. So is there a chance that all that garbage is going to start washing up on our shores?
Well, as your guests there pointed out, it's... generally, as a result of storm activity that you see it on your shores, it tends to go in a kind of a circle. On our coast, it doesn't, unless it's pushed out of that gyre onto the coast, it's going to recirculate. So you do see it there. One way to tell when you're going to see a lot of it is when the Baloa wash up. They're the little jellyfish that are known as by-the-wind sailors that have that little transparent sail that sticks up above them. When you see a lot of those on the beach, you're probably going to see a lot of plastic, too, because they're being blown on shore. They normally stay offshore, but when they are blown on shore, that's the times that you see them on your beaches, you'll probably be seeing...
That's what I've seen, that mixed in with the plastic. Oh.
Well, so how can maybe tell people how big the gyre? We haven't really approached that. How big is it, the one that's out there in the Pacific? Well, there's two in the Pacific, but the one closest to us?
Yeah, the North Pacific has kind of like a pumpkin face with two eyes. It's like off of Japan, there's the Western Garbage Patch, and halfway between where you are and Hawaii is the Eastern Garbage Patch, and We wanted to see, these garbage patches do accumulate and hold on to the debris, but not to the extent to which the rest of the ocean is not affected. I mean, there's a highway between the two of them, and that was part of Jim Ingram's work on Pacific Ocean currents, was to determine how the stuff moves, and it's constantly moving. It doesn't, it can recirculate. It takes it's a 6-year trip, basically, from your shore back to your shore, all the way over to the Philippines, up past Japan, and then back. That's for something that's neutrally buoyant, like a bottle cap, that's a 6-year trip.
So would that bottle cap basically stay in virtually the same condition in that 6-year, or will it deteriorate over that period?
In brittles, we start the... realize that the thicker stuff is what we're seeing. Like, we see a lot of corners, like the corners of crates, corners of tubs, corners of lids, things that are thicker. Necks of bottles are thicker than the body of the bottle. So we'll see a neck with a cap on it and no bottom, stuff like that. So, yeah, it all embrittles. The water leaches the plasticizers out that make it supple, and the sunlight, the ultraviolet rays, cross-link the plastics and embrittle them. So you have a situation in which the stuff is constantly becoming embrittled, and the thinner stuff breaks apart first. But in terms of the size... I'm going to stick my neck out and say that, the North Pacific Gyre as a whole is polluted with at least 50,000 pieces per square kilometer, even at the minimum, and that area is about the size of Africa. It's nearly as large as the Atlantic Ocean. You can think of the world as in three slices. All the land, all the oceans except the Pacific, and the Pacific Ocean. Now, the Pacific Ocean is like one-third of the world. All the land's one-third of the surface area, and all the other oceans are one-third. So, just the North Pacific is probably about the size of the whole Atlantic Ocean, and that North Pacific is pretty well polluted. Yeah, there's a higher, maybe a million pieces per square kilometer in these garbage patches, but, 50,000 pieces per square kilometer is bad enough. I mean, even the UN says the whole world ocean has an average of 46,000 pieces per square kilometer. So,
As a sideline, I wanted to tell you, I had this bamboo basket on my porch for years. When we would go to the ocean several times a week, and we were real water people. And we would always come back with what was on the beach was flip-flops that were made out of rubber. They were more like the old-fashioned kind of flip-flop. They were rubber, not plastic.
Uh-huh.
And most of them were, we noticed when we lined them up, were all left feet.
Yeah, well, that's your beach is a left-foot beach.
So are you saying in the Philippines?
So the right foot.
That's one of the reasons why
the network of beachcombers was developed was because when they had the Nike shoe spill, they needed to match to get pairs, and they needed to get people from fairly far away that had the corresponding shoe, with left or right.
I believe that, yeah.
And the ocean, that just shows you how good the ocean is at separating based on minor differences, and it's also very good at matching like with like, putting things that are similar together.
Wow.
So you get splitting going on in the ocean, and things like these ghost net big things that we see out there that damage propellers are knitted all these bits and pieces together. But the fascinating way to think about it is that that's why we have left and right-handed versions of ourselves, is because our ancient ancestors in the ocean were more successful at occupying ocean habitat if they created a left and right-handed version of themselves.
Oh, now you're turning into a philosopher.
Really?
Oh, that's actually, I think that's Ebbets Myers.
Really? Yeah. Very interesting. Now, what do we do about it? I know you've set up monitoring protocols and things like that, but, you can tell us something about that, but where do we go beyond that?
Well, I think, it has to be, as I said before, a steady state economy is going to have to be instituted worldwide to solve the problem. I don't see how you can have a growth economy where the competition fool the market basically into purchasing your product independent of its utility is the paradigm. I don't see how that paradigm can slow down the creation of waste, which is what we've really perfected in our final stages of our industrial society, is the perfection of waste. We've made wasting just an absolutely essential part of the economy. And I just don't see how we can get out of it and stop this wasting reaching the environment, both, chemicals and plastics and liquids, in a unbridled rush to the marketplace. We have to have some thought behind these products, and you'll never get traction in any political forum if you take that point of view, because it contradicts the very essence of our society. Well, that's why I've come up with the formulation that the system that brought us this far can't take us the rest of the way. If we can't acknowledge that fact, I don't think there's much hope.
Well, that's it. We always rely on the mechanical fix, something that we can slap on that fixes it. But we're talking, social change that is being really inhibited by that process, by that consumerism.
Yeah, and it works fine as long as you don't care about your or the planet's health.
Right.
Yeah, I think it's one of the biggest problems that man is facing. And it's something that people are ignoring, but it's been talked about for decades. I had written this article about rubbish, and although I'm not a fan of dictates from Rome, Pope Paul II in 1979 wrote this encyclical that was really interesting, commenting on man and his garbage. Mm. And he said, to quote him, "The man of today seems ever to be under the threat from what he produces. That is to say, from the result of his work, of his hands, and even more so, of the work of his intellect and the tendencies of his will.
Yeah, that's right. Very good. And more recently, the Pope has said that pollution is a sin.
Wow.
All right.
As well as having two vaginas.
A deadly one.
Yeah, I don't know if he's weighed in on that.
Yeah. Well, I suppose our governor, Governor Schwarzenegger, has all that girly men stuff. Is he predicting the future?
Well, you know, we're currently inundated with ads from Big Pharma. Basically creating the need for new drugs to deal with these problems that are caused by the economy itself.
Right.
That's it. Just take some Abilify. It'll be all right.
I mean, the names just are just coming out.
Aren't they crazy?
It's a new one every day. You know.
And they always show the ocean in the background.
Yeah.
That's ironic.
But one, we have to understand that's good for the economy to have a lot of sick people being cured by a lot of drugs, or at least having some of the symptoms ameliorated by a lot of drugs. That you know, it's the same way that a safe driver is not as good for the economy as a reckless driver, because a reckless driver, you got the insurance company, the body and fender guy, the tow truck people, you know, you're doing a lot of employment when you get in a wreck and you got to buy a new car. But if you just drive around all your, you know,
right, that's so true.
Conservatively, you're not really producing a lot of work. A healthy person is not really producing a lot of income for anybody. As a matter of fact, And just a few generations ago, my grandparents, they never expected to see a doctor their whole life. They didn't believe in doctors. They didn't want us. The idea was that you could live a good, healthy, long life and never, ever once go to the doctor. Now, that just seems so foreign to us now. It's almost as if our health plan is the most important part of our life, how good our health plan is.
Right.
Yeah, I told my doctor I wasn't going to be a frequent flyer.
Right. No, it's incredible. And now you do have some, I know you have some other groups are helping you, are moving along on this.
Yeah, there's some activists, the Plastic Pollution Coalition, the Earth Resource Foundation, California Resource Recovery Association, the Zero Waste Movement. All these folks are dedicated to a new form of existence in which everything is treated as a resource, and in which we produce for the long haul. I mean, this is the cradle-to-cradle philosophy of McDonough and Braungart, which is what they call playing the infinite game, which is to think of the products we make being good for us and for all subsequent generations, as far as we can see into the future.
So the littlest thing someone could do was not use plastic bags.
That's good. Like bring tin foil for your doggy bag, or wax paper, maybe both. First wax paper, then tin foil over your leftover pizza or whatever it is. You can bring your own mug to Starbucks. You can probably bug them enough. They'll fill it for you, you know. I mean, people are too worried about germs. This is crazy.
Right.
All this paranoia. You know, like, you're supposed to be scared of your cutting board, you know. I mean,
yeah, right.
It's crazy because the way children become resistant to disease is by playing in the dirt. You know, you put kids in a bubble, they're going to be getting sick from every little bug. A study was done on Japanese people and the number of baths they took, and as the number of baths increased, the number of illnesses increased. You've got to avoid this clean fetish if you want to be robust, immune,
and stinky.
I mean, what's the deal with all this deodorant? I mean,
oh yeah, right. Forget about that. Yeah, deodorant
and perfume. Lock
up those
my goodness!
Oh yeah. Ooh.
No, it's incredible what's been developed. You know, it's
and
just,
the makeup thing. You know, a lot of the phthalates, which are anti-androgens, the children that, you know, have to have IVs when they're born premature. Often the males don't develop their testicles. They have undescended testicles because of the phthalates that make this stuff flexible. The phthalates are also makes that cake makeup, you know, nice and flexible, not crack. So the idea that we have these babies competing in beauty contests where they're all made up, my goodness, is insane.
Yeah, they have a powder now that's made out of dirt. I think that's a real good idea.
A powder?
It is.
Well, minerals.
Yeah. No, progressive. These are the companies that are going to be leading the future, the companies that have seen the light and have made their feedstocks for their products non-toxic.
And they're also appealing to a customer that's thinking that way.
Well, you know, the sicker we get, the more we're going to start thinking that way.
Wow, yeah. if the lines on the graph don't cross, and it's too late, yeah.
Yeah, well, you know, it's never too late because we are extremely creative, and we do Herculean things sometimes when all we need to do is just kick back and you know, think clearly. But I hate to see us constantly in this rat race of Herculean solutions for Herculean problems when, you know, we could be living lives of freedom, fulfilling our own needs and desires with automation and healthy technology, you know, that really truly does liberate us to live more fulfilling lives, not plugged in to an earpiece, but, you know, part of the natural world, happy and free.
Right.
Well, Captain Moore, I am a big fan of yours, and I feel like I'm talking to a celebrity.
I'm not a big fan of the cult of the personality. Sometimes you have to get out there and create a personality to get anything through in this media-driven world that we live in, you know. So I accept the notoriety in order to get the message out there, but I, you know, I just assumed that it was a group effort.
Well, yeah, it was interesting. You were on the Colbert Report a couple of weeks ago, and that was interesting because it's a very different type of interview, you know, when somebody's, you know, portraying a part. How was that for you? It must have been, was that difficult?
Actually, they try to mitigate the difficulty by giving you challenge questions that he may ask so that you can get prepared. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they always leave a few out so he can trip you up at the end. But I was able to prepare some responses, and so I had some things up my sleeve, you know, and I was able to have fun with them. So.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
It wasn't a super bummer, you know. It was just a little bit too short, but it was okay.
Well, it's good to get, I say, you got to get the word out there, so, you know, and that's a great resource for that.
Yeah, a lot of people that I was surprised how many people watch that show.
Yeah, yeah, I think a lot of people,
He sort of, I kind of like it because he destroys this kind of box that people get put into, you know. Everything, he's got the flag flying, and you know, he's got all the symbology there of, you know, the ultra right, and then, you know, he's got this way off the wall stuff coming out, you know, so it's like, it's crazy. I mean,
yeah, that's his charm.
He destroys the stereotype, which I kind of like.
Yeah. Oh yes, yes,
it's important. Because it seems like many people, they only relate to that sort of interview anymore. It's got to be contentious and oppositional, and so he's kind of doing reverse psychology and a really good job of it.
Yeah, I think there's room for that sort of artistic rendering of the status quo.
I think nothing works as well as satire.
Yeah.
When it comes to, you know, the kinds of things that drive us up the wall in terms of, you know, the right wing.
Yeah.
Yeah, did you know that George Carlin had a skit on plastic?
Oh, really?
Yeah, it was pretty good.
I'll have to check that.
We should have been playing that tonight. Yeah.
Now, are there any government groups anywhere in the world, the United Nations, is anybody doing anything?
Well, I was privileged to speak at the Club of Rome in Amsterdam earlier December. There, the Minister of the Environment, Jacqueline Cramer, was the first nation as Minister of the Environment. She asked on behalf of the Netherlands for the United Nations Environmental Program member nations to come up with ideas on dealing with what she called the plastic soup in the ocean. And so that's what it takes. You have to be a nation to be part of the United Nations, and that's the first nation that has asked the UN to get involved in this issue. Now, the United Nations Environmental Program has had a site where you can the Marine Debris Information Gateway that has had a lot of really good pictures in it of marine debris and some good statistics and some papers, and one of my papers was in there. And they are aware it's a big problem, but, you know, they have the International Maritime Organization that writes the legislation on dumping of plastic in the ocean, and has prohibited dumping of plastic anywhere in the ocean. All the members that have signed MARPOL, the Marine Pollution Agreement developed by the IMO, Annex 5, dealing with solid waste, prevents the dumping of plastic anywhere in the ocean. But there are so many exceptions, like accidental loss. Like if you're a fisherman, you could just say you lost your stuff accidentally.
Or a cargo ship loses a cargo container.
Cargo containers don't even have to report them unless there's over seven of them lost. I mean,
oh,
it's crazy.
That's their rule, huh?
Yeah, so...
what about the California Coastal
Commission?
We need
to have an inventory of what's being lost out there. And so we're asking, and the MARPOL's up for reauthorization this year, and we want them to at least have to report when they lose stuff. How much was lost and where?
What the heck was it?
A vague idea, yeah.
Might be good to know.
So, really, we're so far from anything, really. I mean, it just sounds like, you know, we know what's going on, and but really, there's been no movement, really, movement to, you know, to do anything, really, physically.
Yeah, there's a degree of paralysis worldwide, which is fostered by, you know, the status quo. They want things to remain the same because they're profitable. And we're just a minority that is urging a radical change from the status quo. But the reasons for radical change... do not diminish. They increase as time goes on. So we certainly hope that those reasons and the rationality that drives our movement, you know, takes its rightful place at some point in history.
Exactly. And obviously, I'm sure you need help. Perhaps you can give us out your website, and if people want to donate or volunteer or anything like that.
Sure, that would be wonderful. Thank you for the opportunity. They can go online. We have a beautiful web page, www.algalita.org.
Oh, yeah, I see that. The Algalita Marine Research Foundation in Long Beach, right?
That's it.
Do you know Marcus Erickson?
Marcus is my colleague who I said was on the Five Gyres project. Now he's doing the North Atlantic Gyre.
Oh, right. Mm.
He's out there trying to get some bottom samples, too, North Atlantic Gyre, as well as surface samples.
So give that website again. I want to write it down again.
Just Google Algalita, A-L-G-A-L-I-T-A, Algalita, Algalita, A-L-G-A-L-I-T-A.
Got it.
What was it? Was that named after anything specific?
Yeah, well, I got my start in kelp transplanting. You know, the rainforest of the ocean is the giant kelp, Macrocystis, and we were losing ours here in Southern California. So really the reason, one of the reasons I started and one of the first focuses of the Algalita Marine Research Foundation was kelp transplanting. We have to sort of become gardeners of the ocean now. And since we've taken all the big fish out and the predators that, you know, eat the sea urchins, the kelp babies can't get started because they're preyed on by the sea urchins, which have grown out of control and created urchin barrens.
Yeah, so I guess we don't have that problem up here in Northern California because a lot of people go after the urchins.
And well, yeah, but and also you still have abalone there, too, and you still have some of the top predators, and it's colder, so you don't have all the recreational divers and stuff. Eliminated a lot of it. We've almost made our abalone go extinct, and the large lobsters and the big sheephead and the things that would eat those, and the sea otters, too. You still got sea otters up there, which eat the urchins.
Yes,
we do.
But we used to have them down here, and now we don't.
Wow.
And so we have to kind of be the surrogate sea otters and go out there and move the urchins away from where we transplant the kelp, and then we can get it to grow again.
Wow. Yeah, and I saw a film about, you know, when the wolves were, you know, went away from Yellowstone and what happened just because they took that top predator out, all the other things that either disappeared or died off or didn't grow, I mean, just... You know, nobody knew such an effect would occur.
Well, that's what I told Colbert, you know. He said, well, isn't there something good about all this plastic in the ocean? I said, well, that's an interesting concept, you know, that our technology can improve on natural systems. But do you really think that a finely tuned natural system like the ocean, the way that make it better is to fill it full of our garbage?
you put him in the hot seat, huh?
Yeah, a friend of mine, Lowell Bergman, that was the guy on 60 Minutes that exposed the tobacco industry. He and I went to school together.
Oh.
Wow.
And he told me, why don't you ask him a question? You know, so also,
I decided to ask
him a question. But, alga in Spanish means kelp, and we wanted to do transplanting all the way down in the California Bight. You know, it doesn't respect political borders, so half of the California Bight is below the U.S.-Mexico border, and alga in Spanish means kelp. So algarita is sort of like a takeoff on the Spanish word for kelp.
Oh, okay.
And do you have any, you have connection with California Coastal Commission?
Oh, yeah. They were one of our first big supporters. Chris Perry, their director of education, and
how are they funded? Is that a government thing? It sounds like it.
In California, the Coastal Commission is a government entity. Yeah.
Yeah.
But they have to get a lot of private funding for a lot of their activities too. But yeah, they've been great in supporting us. Evan Schwartz. Coastal Cleanup Day, you know, they really like to use our statistics to motivate people to get involved in Coastal Cleanup Day.
And bring awareness. And Greenpeace, they did some report called Plastic.
Yeah, I edited that report and contributed to it. And also I took their anti-whaling boat, Esperanza, to the garbage patch. They invited me to lead an expedition on their... an old Russian fire boat, Esperanza.
Because that report said 80% of the ocean's litter originated on land.
Yeah, that's the figure that the United Nations gives, 80% land-based and 20% ship-based. But when you get out in these garbage patches, the stuff you see out there is mostly fishing industry-related because it's designed to last in the ocean and it's deployed farther from land, so... The big pieces, the big stuff is buoys and nets. That's what we see in abundance out there.
Mm-hmm.
Well, so, for yourself, what do you see over the next year? What are you going to be doing to further the course?
Speaking and writing, the bottom fell out of the charter market, so the vessel, just with this TED conference charter I got, is about the only thing going on. So I'm going to be working on... a book called Plastic Ocean. Penguin Avery is publishing, and then I'm speaking all over the state. I'll be speaking at the World Affairs Council in San Francisco in March, and then I'm going to be going up to Kamloops up in British Columbia near where the Winter Olympics is, speaking at the Thompson Rivers University in March as well. And, just got back after I did the Colbert Report. I did an East Coast speaking tour from Maine to North Carolina and spoke to a lot of universities and research institutes back there. So just basically trying to get the word out now that there's a problem that is too big to solve with traditional means, and this, you know, fantasy of vacuuming it up out of the ocean is just another, you know, crazy techno-fix fantasy that, you know, right. It's like sending the Boy Scouts on Sunday up with slurp guns to pull the chlorofluorocarbons out of the upper atmosphere and get rid of the ozone hole.
Right.
It's about the same, you know, the garbage patch in the Pacific, North Pacific, is about the same size as the ozone hole.
Mm.
Wow.
Interesting. Interesting correlation, yeah.
I don't know that they're related, but they are in the size, about 10 million square miles.
Wow. So what type of feedback are you getting on going around the country? Are some people, like, pushing back against you? It's not a big deal?
You know, there's no ideological baggage. There's no real partisan baggage with this. It's, like I said, it's just too visible. Nobody likes garbage in their home, on their street, in their river, and it doesn't really matter what political stripe you are. You just don't want a bunch of crap all around, and so I just stick to the facts, and I don't have too much trouble.
What is the greatgarbagepatch.org?
Huh? Don't know.
Oh.
I have it on a piece of paper here. It says it's a project of Sea Studies Foundation. Sea Studios Foundation.
Oh, Sea Studios. Yeah, they're a good collaborator. They've done some filming with us. They're a good group. They have some very neat tanks and stuff they can film interactions with. And they're a sort of, you know, up near neck of the woods there, not too far from Monterey Bay Aquarium, I think.
Oh, okay. Hmm. And then what's the EPA? They monitor floating debris. They have a program that does that?
I wish.
That's what it says here.
Really?
It says the United States has the EPA monitoring floating debris program.
Huh.
Yeah, well, good luck.
Sounds good.
Maybe in the Potomac or something.
Yeah, I mean, every coastal nation should have a monitoring program. And when we give the parameters of water, ocean water analysis, or even freshwater analysis now, we should include the plastic content. You know, it used to be just you could give the pH, the bacteria count, the salinity, the temperature. I think we need to give the plastic content now because it's pretty ubiquitous.
Yes. Oh, that's, yeah, it's a major constituent of a cubic foot of water, so it should be there.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and the chemicals which leach from it.
Absolutely.
Wow. We're talking to Captain Charles Moore of the Algolita Marine Research Foundation from Long Beach. And, wow, thank you very much for giving us such a great background and really filled out what we know. I've learned an incredible amount. I thought I've read quite a bit, but there's still a lot to learn.
Well, it's a brand new field, and we've started the first postdoctoral program. So it's at the University of Hawaii, Hilo, Big Island of Hawaii, where Hilo is located, is a victim of this debris. Their beaches are turning to plastic, but the plastic is generated far from their shores. I estimate less than 1% of the plastic on their beaches is actually generated in Hawaii.
Wow.
So they've got the pathos to be, you know, the focal point of studying this problem. They should study it, and they should charge back the countries that are littering their beaches to clean it up.
Yeah.
You know? Mm-hmm. And so that's the first. We started a curriculum, an undergraduate curriculum in marine debris there, and now we got a postdoc program. So that's the first university anywhere in the world where you could go, you know, and study marine debris. And that's one of the things we're trying to do is make it, you know, because it's the same problem with recycling. You can't really go to, you know, and take a series of classes in recycling at any university in the United States either. So the two things are related. You know, we need this debris to be understood, and we need, you know, the remedies to be better communicated through our educational system.
It's great to hear you talk about it in so many ways, and I was going to call you the Dalai Lama of plastic, but I see here that the Dalai Lama already is encouraging his followers to stop using plastic. This was reported in January of 2009.
Hmm. Oh.
So he's on your side.
That's great. That's great. Well, that's just what I'm saying. There's no real ideological baggage here. You got the Pope, the Dalai Lama, and as a matter of fact, you know, industry itself is pretty shocked by my findings. I mean, they were one of the first people that invited me to speak was the California Film Extruders and Converters Association that makes the plastic bags and the Society of the Plastics Industry. We cooperated with them to study the plastics getting out of the factories, too. They wrote us a letter on their letterhead that we could use to introduce ourselves to plastic manufacturers so that we could study the plastics leaving the factory by accident. And so we have had a degree of cooperation from the plastic industry itself. They're genuinely shocked to find out the extent of the problem.
Well, that's good to know.
Interesting, yeah. So sometimes you have to go back to the source to move it forward, maybe.
I don't think they're going to embrace, you know, all the solutions, like, you know, stopping manufacturing of PVC and styrofoam, but they will eventually.
Now,
they just have to find alternatives.
The people that are making it out of
scenery on and, you know, still make a profit.
Right.
How they're making some of those products out of vegetable
cellulose.
We want to be very careful evaluating claims of biodegradability, but there are companies like Metabolics that are making truly marine degradable plastics, and that's what we want to see. The PLA, the stuff that Dow, you know, is putting out that's made out of corn, is not marine degradable. It's just about as long lived in the ocean as regular plastic, even though it's made out of corn. So you have to be, you know, it has to meet the ASTM standard for degradability in order to be a true improvement over the existing.
Oh, there actually is a standard. That's good to know.
Yeah, I've been working with the Navy on that and the Army because they want to be, you know, submarines have actual torpedo chutes that they use for garbage. It's dedicated to putting trash out. And, you know, battleships and aircraft carriers are huge cities on the ocean, and they have a lot of trash, and they would like to be able to throw a lot of it overboard, but they can't if it's plastic. So they're looking for solutions, and their labs are making sure that these things actually will degrade in the ocean. So they're pioneers in developing the ASTM standards for marine degradable plastics.
Oh, wow. Interesting.
On the East Coast, do they still send out barges with the garbage and dump it like they used to do? Do they still do that on the East Coast?
Well, that would be a violation of MARPOL Annex 5.
Hmm.
They can't do that anymore.
Mm-hmm. That's good.
But landfill's not a very good answer, and incineration is not a very good answer either. Resource recovery is the answer, and zero waste.
Exactly.
Cradle to cradle.
Yeah, there is no other alternative. It just, there isn't, I suppose, yeah.
Oh, we've got 10 billion people, and we, you know, we need three Earths if we're going to, everybody's going to be, you know, driving an Escalade.
Yeah, exactly. When we get to Mars and pollute that, there's no oceans to dump
it. Yeah, well, I've got a really good cartoon. It shows the first lunar lander with people on it coming out, and they're each carrying a trash bag in the... They're saying, we come in peace. Where's the landfill?
did you see they discovered a new planet, and it's as light as styrofoam?
Oh, no.
That's what they compared it to. And it made me think, uh-huh. You know, it's like, you have that visual.
You know, natural pumice is the styrofoam that we used to have floating in the ocean. And it is light. And that's the albatross will be fooled into eating some pumice sometimes.
Mm.
But now we've got as much foam detritus as we do pumice in the ocean.
Mm. Mm. Oh, dear. And, yeah, I suppose, again, that whole the food chain all the way up is affected.
Yeah, whales are eating it. And the tiny zooplankton. And everything
and
in between fish, all the fish we've looked at. We're starting to do a coastal study now, local fish eating it, the anchovies we found eating it, and now we're,
At one time they said in the Great Lakes or in freshwater lakes, the safest fish to eat was the younger fish.
Hmm. Like yeah, we've come up with a new recipe, minestrone.
Right.
Because they haven't had time to absorb the chemicals and whatnot.
Huh. Yeah. Well, I guess that's so much for sushi, right?
Yeah, well, now you can have your sushi. You just want to lay a bunch of minnows on top of the rice.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, because they're tuna.
Micro sushi.
But yeah, like tuna being on the top end, does that actually get into the tissues of it or the plastics? How does that work its way
out? It's a sad commentary that we've scared Eskimo women now against breastfeeding and eating their diet, so they're starting to eat like Big Macs and stuff,
Right.
Because of the fact that they eat so high on the food chain, you know, the blubber of the seals and on. Is where these pollutants lie. And we talked about how plastic likes oil is an absorber for oil. I mean, if you have an oil spill, the booms they put around the vessel are made out of the same material that makes the bottles and the caps. Expanded polypropylene, expanded polyethylene are absorbent pads that are used to collect oil out of the water from an oil spill. So all these oily pollutants are absorbed by plastic, and the fat of the organism is where the oil in a body is, and the pollutants that are oily stay in the fat. So this is when you metabolize fat, either through breastfeeding, the firstborn gets a huge load, the secondborn somewhat less, and the thirdborn somewhat less, but the firstborn offspring of a human, the mother's milk discharges a lot of her pollutants and her fat into that baby. So there's concern among Eskimo women that, you know, breastfeeding may not be the thing to do.
Wow.
Oh, dear.
And they're not, you know, wanting to eat that blubber like the muktuk. The seal blubber is a staple, and it's sad that they've been deprived of their birthright. It's like I've been deprived of my birthright here as a marine mammal of swimming in my own bay in front of my house. The Eskimos have been deprived of their birthright, their food that they've sustainably harvested since the dawn of their history.
Years ago, I went down to Balboa Island. Do you know where that is?
Oh, yeah.
That's down in your neck of the woods.
Yeah.
And I didn't think the water was very clean then, and it was about, I would say, 15 or 20 years ago.
Mm-hmm. No, yeah, well, we've actually cleaned it up since then.
Oh,
good.
In some ways, it's better now.
Mm-hmm.
Because we've got what we call TMDLs, total maximum daily loads. And that's a way to enforce keeping pollutants out of our rivers and waterways. We have regulations now that limit the amount of stuff that can be legally discharged into a waterway.
We'll have to check out if our Russian River has that same system.
Yeah, the State Water Resources Control Board administers those TMDLs. So you have to show some impairment, and then you can create a TMDL for that impairment and force it.
Oh, yeah, our river is really interesting. It can go from a foot deep to, in a flood stage at the worst, about 50 feet deep.
Yeah.
It's pretty drastic.
I've been to Greenville and
have you?
Over there, yep.
Yeah, when it's kind of interesting, and this is a recent phenomenon when the water went up and then it went down. There was white plastic bags hung up on all the willows that go along, and I really hadn't remember seeing that before.
No, it's fairly new. I mean, it was just in this last decade that it became common to see them flying as you drove along the freeway and the roads.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is fairly recent.
Well, that's, it's ubiquitous. You don't realize until it's there, and then it's too late. It's there.
Well, and the point that we're making is that it's additive. It's not like, you know, this crop is going to go away and the new crop is going to replace it. It's like every deposition is additive. The stuff that was there before doesn't go away. It remains there.
Right.
It's cumulative.
Exactly.
Well, some towns and burghs have instituted like a 15-cent, I don't know what you call it, a tax, but if you want a brand new plastic bag, you pay 15 cents for it. And that, you know, that would certainly encourage people to bring, at least reuse their plastic bags as much as they possibly could without just getting a new one every time you go buy a thing of milk.
Right.
Yep.
Well, that's our responsibility. Yeah, I mean, we have to take some responsibility.
Right.
As simple as that.
But that would be...
That figure is based on San Francisco calculating how much it costs for them to dispose of the bags, and it was 17 cents per bag.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah, we need more of it. But, I think, actually, our time is running out on my show, so I'd we'd better wrap up, and perhaps you could give out your website again and any other information, any upcoming events very soon.
You want to check out the Five Gyres Project. You can get to a link on our Algolita website, Algalita. Just Google Algolita. And go to the website, and you'll see the Five Gyres Project, and then you can follow the blog from Anna Cummins and Marcus Erickson on board Pangaea Explorations, doing trawls out there in the Atlantic, the North Atlantic, near the Sargasso Sea, where the North Atlantic garbage patch is, and any support that you give for the Five Gyres Project would be greatly appreciated. We also need support to process the samples that we have from our last expedition. We did a 10-year retrospective of the place that we sampled 10 years ago in 1999-2009, so we're going to be able to see some trending. And we need support in order to have money to analyze those samples. And we also, you know, extended our range all the way, two-thirds of the way to Japan, and got samples from the international dateline so that we can kind of see how the stuff thins out as you go farther west.
Interesting.
Between the two garbage patches.
Wow.
Do any of the organizations like NRDC or, you know, these environmental groups, do they... Have they plugged into you at all?
Environmental groups are sort of like boats. They have their own personality. They do their own thing, and it's hard to get them to team up and cooperate together. But, Heal the Bay down here where we are is very good on the legislative angle, introducing the leash law to try to keep the bottle caps on the bottle, you know, like we have the... pull tops on the beer cans that came off. Now they don't come off. Well, we want the same thing with the bottle caps. We don't want them to come off because the birds are eating them like crazy.
And also they tell you when you recycle that they don't want the caps. So I usually, throw the caps in the garbage and throw the bottles in the...
Then
I should leave the caps on.
It's unfortunate because polypropylene is a number two in, the quantity made, and there's really no good excuse for the industry not recycling the polypropylene caps. There's plenty of polypropylene out there that should be recycled. We need to have color-coded plastic stuff so everybody knows what goes where, and we need to separate at home. So that's what they do in Germany. You got a lot of different bins in Germany. Get used to it.
And if it was $4 a pound like copper is, then people maybe would treat it a little different.
Well, it'll never be as valuable as heavy metals, but it's got to have a true value. And we're starting to get away from subsidizing petroleum. You know, they say it would be $17 a gallon if we didn't have all the subsidies on petroleum. So
right, and the pay for pollution cleanups and all those sort of things. Yeah, health and what have you. Yeah.
So we're getting there, but I'm afraid that we're getting where we're going too slowly, and that things are going to start crashing around us. Systems, biological systems, our own biological system, ecosystems, individual species are going to crash. We don't know which one will first, but we're going to start seeing some major crashes. I've already seen the barnacles dying out in the Central Pacific. Used to be every buoy we pulled up had a beard of, you know, several kilos of barnacles, and now it's just algae. So apparently exotic algae from the coastal zone have floated out to the center of the ocean on this plastic debris and displaced the barnacles, gooseneck barnacles that used to grow there.
Well, maybe we don't have to look any further than in the mirror.
Right.
Well, according to Ebbesmeyer, we may be on a dead end course. He said that it may not take very many generations for us to lose our ability to reproduce.
Well, I'm going to celebrate. I'm going to celebrate tonight and drink out of a glass bottle.
Yeah, glass is very nice stuff.
I'm willing to do my part.
Yeah. Okay, let's all pledge that. Yes.
Yes.
Well, thank you so much, Captain Charles Moore.
Yes.
Really appreciate you coming on and giving us a fabulous interview about the Pacific. Oh, well, garbage. Yeah, what can you say?
You are one of our national heroes, if not global heroes at this point, because really, before you made enough noise that people started listening?
I was calling you Sir Charles Moore earlier.
Yeah, well, I think it was more likely Richard Thompson will be knighted before I will, because he's a British citizen.
Okay.
We need some.
His article in Science was a seminal one. Lost at Sea, Where is All the Plastic? He did a study of plankton toes from ships coming into the coast of Great Britain. A lot of plastic. So, yeah, we do have colleagues. It's an interdisciplinary subject, and there's a lot of folks that care about it, but we're still pretty small. You can easily, put all the people that study plastic waste in a small room, have a, small, our conferences are, 100 people is a lot to have at a conference on plastics.
Amazing.
That's changing. So thank you for your time and the extended length of the interview, allowing us to, this is the way Rush Limbaugh should do his shows.
Yes, indeed. And we'll be putting up on the website so people can keep listening as well.
All right. Well, thanks a lot for your time and interest, and certainly hope that the issue continues to garner attention.
Yes, indeed. It certainly will up here. I know that. Thank you so much, Captain.
All right. Good night.
Nice talking with you. Bye-bye.
Good night.
Bye.
Wow.
Well, thank you, Captain Charles Moore. Well, thank you. It's like depressing thank you.
Yeah, but knowledge is power, Arnold.
Yeah.
Quite amazing that, for something so disastrous and catastrophic that's going on. I mean, really, when you think about the food chain and the polymers and the ocean floor, and you put it all together and it spells, we're kind of screwed.
Yeah.
And he's saying, he's giving us this long interview here and talking about the, it's changing, but yeah, like 100 people at a conference is a big deal. I mean, what does that say?
Yeah, when 80,000 will go to a Super Bowl and only 100 will go to a conference
But at least I know where all my right feet of my left-footed flip-flops are.
That was a good thing.
That's what I got.
Indeed.
I think we need a field trip to the right flip-flop.
Yeah. Well, let me just put on a record and then we'll get back and just finish off. I thought this would be a good one. It's Robin Trower, who I interviewed last year, and it's called What Lies Beneath.
How can she do this path?
Okay, that was What Lies Beneath by Robin Fowler. And Miss Annie's coming right up and will be here in 1 minute. And, yeah, we have... well, I just put that piece of paper somewhere, but coming up next week, we have a very, very exciting lineup, which Miss Annie will be with as well. First of all, I have on my show from 7, I have Fish Bear, a really good local band, coming in from just after 7. And then at 8:30, Miss Annie's coming in early, and we're going to have Spencer Burrows and Throwbeck coming in. A very big local band, and excellent musicians, both of them. So it's going to be a very exciting week next week. And let's see what else is coming up. Let's just let you know. And I'm away on the 12th, and then on the 19th, I'll have Jill Ravitch, who is running for DA in Sonoma County. So I'll be speaking with her. And anyway, so Miss Annie, you should just get going without further ado. The phone number is 874-1073, Cows Radio 107.3 FM, and KOWS.FM on your internet tubings. So, Miss Annie?
Yes, and I just want to add about Throwbeck that they will be have a big show coming up next Saturday night. So they'll be here... on Friday night, and then big show at the Russian River Brewing Company in Santa Rosa on Saturday night, so everybody can check them out and see what they think. Great band, and they were recommended to me by Tower of Power Emilio Castillo.
Oh, that's right.
Yes,
that's right. And what's funny is it's just there's a connection. Just I didn't know it, but between Throwbeck and Fish Bear, it turns out that Fish Bear's lead guitarist and vocal guy, Hadley Black, was actually trained by Spencer Burrows, the Throwbeck lead man and guitarist on the guitar.
We've got an incredible amount of talent here in the Bay Area with talented musicians. Musicians, yeah. Amazing, and artists.
Yeah, we're very,
so
very lucky.
We're lucky happy to promote them here at Cows, too.
Exactly. So tune in next week. It should be good. So, Miss Annie, go right ahead. I'm done. I've got nothing lined up. Just go right ahead with some lovely soul and R&B.
All right. We got it coming at you till midnight tonight, keeping you warm. It is a full moon, but you can't see it outside. It's a wolf moon, I understand, one of the brightest of the year. So the wolf men are out tonight. So stay tuned and get ready for some treats.
All right. Wind it up, baby.